COVID has really presented some of the closest relationships for me, has really presented some challenging, ugly cry moments with individuals. It's really learning to love what's in front of you. Necessarily coming to terms, but finding that love.
Katie is a yoga teacher and a psychopractitioner, mixing traditional psychology practices with holistic and spiritual healing modalities. She works with veterans, first responders, and their families. She also travels across Ontario as a guest speaker and a teacher, offering her teachings and messages through a trauma-informed, trauma-sensitive lens. Welcome to The Safe Haven, a space for stories to be shared about the lights and darks, highs and lows of life. Katie's first career was as a social worker. Not long into her studies and career path, she hit rock bottom, carrying baggage from each case, which impacted her overall well-being. Following a friend's suggestion over 10 years ago, Katie went into her first yoga class and has never turned back. Through her own yoga practice and various trainings, finding peace and reflecting on where her skill set could serve others, LifeSpark was created. In this beautiful conversation, Katie shares her yoga journey, career paths, and things she's currently working through, including her deep desire to be a mom. She opens up about love and loss, growth in her relationship, and unlocking a love and understanding that she and her partner had never known before. I asked Katie to start us off with a Coles Notes of her yoga journey.
Yoga, Coles Notes, that's going to be difficult because it's been a beautiful long journey. And how do you condense all that?
Yeah. Okay.
Young social worker, young youth worker, definitely, you know, struggling, horribly struggling with emotional baggage that I was carrying from caseload to caseload. There was a lot of things that were going on in my own personal life. And I had taken on the commitment and the purpose of being a social worker, being a youth worker. And I hit rock bottom early on in my career, very early on. They do say that the average social service individual, whatever you want to label yourself, is 5 years. I almost didn't even make it to two. And, you know, somebody had just mentioned, hey, why don't you try yoga? Ironically enough, Madonna, it was all about Madonna. Madonna was doing the yoga. And I went and I got a cheap mat. I got on the mat in a class that I now know was not a beginner's class. So if you know the yogic lineage, Ashtanga is not for anybody mm-hmm. who doesn't know what they're doing. No. And I landed in the 60-minute class that kicked my, I'm going to say ass. Can mm-hmm. I say ass?
Oh, of course you can say ass.
It kicked my ass physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And it just, I immediately just started to unpackage and went into all the different compartments of where I had trauma, where those that I was working with, their trauma was starting to, I was feeling like I needed to inherit their trauma. And so I've been practicing on the mat as a student for over 10 years now. And then about six-ish years ago, I felt the urge to share. And I wanted to share and I wanted to others around me to have the breakthroughs that I had, or at least the opportunity to create that breakthrough for themselves. And that's when I officially became a yoga instructor. So that's kind of the Coles Notes without spending 5 or 6 podcast episodes explaining where I've been. And I know that about you, Amanda. I know that you and I could sit and we can get the gab on about yoga.
It's so true. I did write a couple things that I wanted to circle back to, rock bottom being one of them, because social work, you're absolutely right. Now that is a huge endeavor, anything in social work. And so you took that on. I'd love to know a little bit about your journey in there.
You want to know about the journey and social work overall or the journey into the rock bottom?
Let's go journey into rock bottom, because I feel like that's really where this yogic journey kind of began.
I know for me, and I can only speak for myself, a calling to be in social services often comes from the connection that you've made prior in your earlier life. And what I know about my earlier life is that my parents, they did the best they could with what they were equipped with. And they gave myself and my sibling the life that we were meant to have. And there was challenging moments. And I was very blessed to have teachers who invested in me. Teachers who said, you know what, if you want to be something you're not, we'll put you on stage. We'll get you to do drama. We'll help you find outlets. We'll help you find a healing art to kind of clear yourself and to stay present. And I've got to tell you, they completely are one of the reasons why I'm actually here and in the purpose I'm in. So after high school, you know, the decision came, what do I want to do? And I wanted to give back. I really wanted to be that person, you know, pay it forward. And I wanted to be that person. I wanted to be that space and that hub for anyone like myself. That was ultimately the word I would attach to it, is seeking. I was simply just seeking because I was lost. The problem is that when the seeker is just as lost as the person who's trying to help them, you just get into this almost tornado wave of spinning where there's this trauma bond. I can now know what that trauma bond was. And I wasn't clear and I wasn't healed in my own traumas. It was all surface level. And so I went into social work thinking that I was clear, I was healed, I could move forward. I had the ideology, big dreams, big vision. And the thing was, is that I was in the midst of healing as I was also trying to guide those that were needing to be healed, to be heard, to be seen. And, you know, by the time 2 years in, you know, I'm on medication. There's talk of PTSD for myself. There's talk of trauma. And my head is just spinning at this point. And I knew that this was not the letter that I had written for myself, for my future self. So, and Lord and behold, yoga came into that practice, came into the next chapter, the next penning of the letter that I would write to my future self. Mm-hmm.
Were there any moments that came forward while you're trying to help, trying to heal, all of this happening at the same time, that was just this inner knowing that I need help or I need to seek help? And what were the, besides yoga, what other methods did you try to kind of find that within yourself?
I started having interesting individuals. So it was almost like the teachers that had elevated me when I was younger. Mm. I started having individuals start showing up in my life, a Buddhist monk, a, you know, crystal healing expert, who they ironically would be sitting next to me on public transit, or I would bump into them, ironically, getting my morning coffee. Or one of my, you know, office mates would suggest this book. And all of a sudden, you know, I'd be at the library and the book literally would be right in front of me. And I'd be like, hey, didn't so-and-so. So there was all of these little gifts. I know they're gifts now. I know that they are our callings. They are representations of inner guidance, just simply showing outside of myself. But at the time, it was kind of like, this is really kind of odd, but cool, but it felt good.
Where was it in your yogic journey that you started to realize that you were starting to develop those tools to help others?
Probably when people started saying, like, you look less stressed. You know, youth would even say that I was working with would be like, Miss, you're so chill. You know, Miss, you're like more present with me. You have more patience with me. And then I would kind of be like, oh, you know, and then I would start reading that book that a coworker would suggest and then starting up conversations. And then, you know, I would bump into people who hadn't seen me in a couple of years, classmates who were like, oh, what's going on with your life? And I'm like, this is what's going on. And they're like, how did you get here? How are you so calm? How is there this peace? And even I would have superiors around me who would ask, like, what's changed in your life? Because we would go into monthly meetings where I would be very quiet or subdued. Now I was a voice at the table. Now I was like offering up, you know, what was needed at that table, whether it was, you know, treatment plan or it was, you know, a listening ear or maybe a coaching moment for one of my colleagues. And everyone around me started asking, like, what's up? What's up? But in a good way.
And that was yoga.
Yes.
Yoga was that change.
Yeah. At that point, 23, 24 years old. It was solely strictly yoga.
So 6 years ago, that's when you did your yoga teacher training?
I did. That's correct.
Can you elaborate a bit on that journey? Because I know it's a really special one.
Yeah, for sure. What really came up for me at that point 6 years ago is I was disgruntled in the field that I was working in. I was seeing really great opportunities and a larger capacity to bring in the components of holistic modalities such as yoga, such as mindfulness, and all that gets packaged in breath work and the meditations. And there was just such a capacity there for us to bring that into working with the youth that we were working with, but there was so much red tape and there was just so much restriction around it. And it was interesting because I worked with a group of youth workers, social workers. We were almost kind of like Mulder and Scully. We were like mm-hmm. the X-File crew. Mm-hmm. And we did things on a very different realm. And that different realm was that we brought in the yoga, we brought in the mindfulness, and we added that into our caseloads. We added it into our interventions. And time again, the superiors, they know what they know and they don't know what they don't know, but they weren't open to expanding what they could know. And it eventually became almost a daily butting of heads, that it became almost a fatigue around the advocacy for what we now know works when you get youth on the mat, when you get anybody on the mat, when you add in the mindfulness. And so I decided that I would go get my yoga instructor training and that I would seek guidance from after that. So was that now that I would, you know, bring that into a capacity within social work that was more accepting for it, because I would be certified to actually have mm-hmm. those conversations and guide youth and that through classes. Because traditionally, what would be happening is that we would have youth on our caseloads that would AWOL or they would skip school and they would show up in our office. And in our office, they'd be like, hey, miss, hey, mister, can I just sit on the mat? We're like, cool. And next you know what, they're sitting on the mat. They're like, what's that breathing thing that you're talking about? Mm. And so we started to see all these really organic, cool conversations and movement happen with our youth. And so my youth really inspired me to get on the mat and get the yoga teacher training behind me, because then I felt like I could be that leading conversation to, well, what's been built over the last 6 years.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about your journey into turning your yoga teacher training, your mindfulness knowing and training, and then your social work background into what you do today?
For sure. So obviously, seeing the capacity that our youth want to be, they want to be calm, they want to be in stillness. They seek that despite the fact of all the chaos. Mm. And so I made a commitment 5 years ago where I retired from social work. I retired, I cut the ties, I was done. And I decided to keep in connection with those that I knew in the field. And I came at it in a different way. And I came at it in the fact, if there is the capacity within your team to have a holistic conversation and to bring youth onto the mat and to bring mindfulness into that, you know, conversation, and that could be one-on-one, that could be early intervention. And it was just knocking on the door and having those conversations. And it was interesting because those conversations became something bigger than just kids. Mm-hmm. The conversations then started coming from parents. Well, how do I start, or how do I heal myself through the understanding of mindfulness and breath and yoga? And then the conversation got even bigger when an amazing, amazing woman came into my life. Her name's Andrea. And she was a military wife. And she was saying, there are so many out there, wives, loved ones, children of military servicemen and women who are in chaos internally. And it just started to grow. And then it went into working with first responders. And then it's looped back into working with those in trauma recovery.
So what was this woman seeking? Or what did she see that you could offer?
And she was speaking for a large group of individuals, of spouses and loved ones that were really just looking. They were looking for something that allowed them to have 60 minutes, 90 minutes, 1 minute where they were able to come back into their body. They were able to breathe. They were able to take what was going on in front of them and take the reactiveness away from it and be able to come back around to be proactive in the relationships that were in front of them. Mm-hmm.
So you took this knowledge and what did you do with it?
I created this beautiful combination of the traditional, you know, social work, you know, the CBT and all of those great conversations and the traditional psychology, if you want to label it, which it is, the psychology forum. And I mixed in the yoga and I mixed in the mindfulness and the breath work. And what it is a one big, it's a storytelling, but it's a storytelling that comes out of my mouth and comes into their being physically, emotionally, and spiritually, and allows them to journey through movement, through breath, through actually being in their bodies. And the answer that comes out and what they experience across the 60 minutes is so different each and every time. I have some that journey on the mat with me weekly who say every week, holy crap, Katie, like I didn't even know that that needed to come out, or I didn't even know that I was working through that. I have others that meet me the very first time. One of the first ever connections that I had up with first responders in Collingwood was a lovely gentleman who literally came to me and said, I didn't know what it was like to breathe in my body and it scared the crap out of me. And now I never want to stop feeling this way because it's a good fear. It's a good fear to feel the breath going in and out of my body versus the numbness that I've been told that that's just who I am and that's just the way that we live life. Juicy.
I bet you've had some wonderful breakthroughs too on your own journey, but then witnessing that in others must be really moving.
For sure. Like today alone, again, I'm up here, I'm in Collingwood, beautiful view. I'm in a beautiful condo space here. And I'm still shaking from, what is it, 6 hours ago when I stepped on the mat. One, I haven't physically taught a yoga class in 7 months because we're in a pandemic. And, you know, physically, I didn't feel comfortable being in a space having a mask off. Stepping on the mat today with the first responders that I worked with and that I was on the mat and had the honor of leading in practice today, I literally ended my practice. I was crying because there was so much of a breakthrough of the anxiety and the fear that I had, you know, coming back onto the mat. And it goes both ways, Amanda. It goes both ways. It's not just you heal and I witness. It's we heal together. They heal together. There's, I don't know how many classes that I've taught that don't end with handholding. Like literally strangers today, unfortunately not, because we need to keep our 6 feet. But I know in heart, they were holding on to each other. There's classes where literally physically people who don't even know each other just reach their hand out and they're holding hands at the end of class. It's powerful. Mm-hmm.
When you facilitate these really beautiful workshops and practices, are you doing so under your business, which is so beautiful? And I want you to tell us all about it. LifeSpark Holistic.
That's correct. So there's me and then there's LifeSpark. And then on top of that, everyone listening, anyone who's ever been a seeker or even a finder is a LifeSpark. Yeah. It's under the capacity of what I frame as a community, as a vibration, which is known as LifeSpark.
Can you tell us about what LifeSpark is?
LifeSpark is the essence of meeting you where you need to be met in the moment. We all have this internal light inside of us. And sometimes that light does go out and sometimes that light dimmers. And much like when we watch a fire, when things get really warm and things get really in ready to rip roar in a fire, there are sparks that often come off of the fire. And that really is kind of the symbolism, is that your light will light up, your light will dim, but that the spark is always there. And that through this community that I graciously and am so blessed to be able to guide, be able to converse with, be able to be cheerleader with, you know, it's about finding that spark that keeps you going day after day. And that could be through yoga, that could be through coaching, that could be through breath work, that could be through creating conversation, community, capacity building. There's just so much that goes on.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about some COVID lessons? Like, what are some things that you've worked through on your own, or some things that COVID or this new pandemic lifestyle that we've had to form into has taught you?
I'm a planner. I like to think that I'm a free spirit. I like to, you know, falsely promote that I live in the moment, but I don't. So this is me clearing the path and saying I don't live in the moment. I'm a planner. And COVID taught me to really surrender. And it humbled me. It really humbled me to really check myself. Am I really in the practice that I say that I'm in? And that's not only just physically, that's emotionally and that's spiritually. So what it really taught me is gratitude for what I don't have, gratitude for what I do have. It taught me to love in ways that I never thought I could love. Loving people when they are at their most challenging moments, because COVID has really presented some of the closest relationships for me, has really presented some challenging, ugly cry moments with individuals. It's really learning to love what's in front of you. Not necessarily coming to terms, but finding that love, finding that capacity, finding that access within yourself to love the person, the situation, the pandemic in front of you, and always being curious, being curious in what's in front of you and what is the lesson? What is the journey? What is the why? What is the who, the what, the why, the when?
Mm-hmm. Would you share with us something that you're currently working through, like right now?
Couple things are popping into my mind, but I feel a big thing that I'm working through is I would like to be a mom. I'd like to have a child. And unfortunately, over the last year, I have had two miscarriages, and those miscarriages have challenged me. Talk about loving what's in front of you, you know? Yeah, they have really, really challenged me. So something I'm currently working through is the healing process of healing myself so that I can be healed and prepared to be the best parent, to be the best caregiver, to the gift of having a child. And all the in-between moments that come before that and just before it and just after it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that. Because I know that that's not easy to talk about. And I'm so sorry to hear that. I've never experienced this, but some of the closest people in my life have. And it's devastating. So my heart aches for you and for everyone listening that has experienced that or is in that moment right now. That is a tough place to be. So my heart goes out to you for that.
Thank you, Amanda.
In this journey, or wanting to be in motherhood and working towards that and with your partner, and I mean, that's a dark place to be, to basically want something so much and to kind of be slammed back. How do you individually, but also in a partnership, how do you maintain that balance to keep going and keep trying and see the positives through that? That's hard to do.
Yeah, I'm a planner, and you can't really plan for that because you don't sit down and you don't sit there and say to yourself, well, if it goes this way, this is my plan. And if it goes that way, and we're talking about that way right now, this is what my plan is. So it really goes back to just loving yourself and being present in that moment and sitting in your shit, like really allowing yourself to sit in it. Individually, there's days where I sit in it and I'm in it and I just simply feel it physically, emotionally, and spiritually. I've gotten to the point now where I'm able to ask, what is my lesson? What do I need to take away from this? What am I to learn from this? Not so much why am I in this so much anymore. There was a lot of times where it was like, why, why? Now it's very much moving into the what. When it comes to my partnership, my hubby is unbelievable. I can't even put into words how much this unlocked so much of our relationship that we didn't even know that we had. It was in this tragic two rounds of coming to understand that what we thought was going to be a guess what, we're pregnant, became a now we're not pregnant anymore. And what was unlocked in him individually, but us as a couple, was absolutely powerful. And it is the most humbling experience to watch somebody who cannot physically go through what you're going through. You know, for me, I was going through it physically. I was going through it emotionally. He was going through it emotionally. I was going through it spiritually. He's not so spiritual at this moment. Mm-hmm. He's working through, he's coming into his own. Mm-hmm. But there was that physical component where I'm going through what I'm going through physically. And there's that capacity there. He doesn't know what I'm going through physically. So it was this really humbling, almost come to Jesus moment in yoga. I call it come to the mat moment, mm-hmm. where there was so much lessons that were learned in between that void of healing. Mm-hmm.
In your marriage as well, as you're both working through this, and I mean, this is still, it's still fresh, right? It's still something that you guys are working through. Are you finding that you're entering conversations that are opening up other areas besides parenting? Like you're understanding each other on a level that's completely differently than you've ever experienced because you've breached the loss topics, right? In the subject of loss in your marriage now, right? To be parents. But are you finding that the grief that you're experiencing and the mutual understandings that you're coming to are opening up other areas for deeper, richer connection and conversation in your marriage?
Yes, definitely. So my hubby's name is Jay. I got to call him out. Jay, I love you. You're fantastic. Jay's love language is not in communication, and I'm very much a communicator. Mm-hmm. And what it's definitely unlocked for us is there's a lot more of him having that engaging conversation where he's actually starting that conversation, where before it would always be me starting it and then kind of like, you know, nipping, but not in a bad way. More like, kind of trying to get that conversation mm-hmm. out of him. But now he's starting those combos. And just like a side lib as well, in the conversation of loss, in May, we had to unfortunately say goodbye to our fur baby as well, which mm-hmm. was his child. So she transitioned, unfortunately. She was 11 years old. Zoe was her name. Huge. Anybody that knows Life Spark knew Zoe. Zoe came out and was on the mat with some of the yogis. And that was huge. That was really big for Jay as well, because that to him was the living, breathing example of what it was to be a father. And so with the loss of Zoe came more compassionate conversation, mm-hmm. came more desire to be deeper in the connection with each other, because it's him and I, and we're in this together. It's no longer, you know, him on his own and me on his own. And periodically, you know, we get together and we have a relationship. No, it's us together. We are bonded by these experiences. Mm-hmm. And just absolutely fantastic. There's more compassion in our relationship. There's more emotional intelligence mm-hmm. in our relationship coming from his end. He has a wider breadth of knowledge when it comes to expressing how he feels. He's definitely had the more shift, I would say, if you were to outwardly look at who's had the most development. Mm-hmm. I feel that those around us, closest to us, would say that he's just in the darkest of moments, he's found his spark. He's sparking away. Mm-hmm.
How have these transitions in your marriage, in your partnership, and your losses, your mutual losses, informed your practice with what you do with LifeSpark and on the mat with other people?
That's a great question. That's a fantastic question. I've become more willing and open to share who I am and share where I've been over the last, you know, year and a bit or 5 years, or even why I'm even on the mat doing what I do. Before these losses, I would really say that I kept who I was as a heartbeat, as an individual. I kept it very far from my practice. I'd go, I'd do the practice, and I would see, you know, you're the student, I'm the teacher. And then there was kind of that, you know, third wall. Mm-hmm. It was there. And in the last year and a bit, it's at the beginning of the class clearing, like, guys, I've had a really challenging couple of weeks, and this is where I'm at, and I'm healing alongside of you, and we're doing this together. And you know what? I'm going to be a little selfish, and I'm going to put you into a certain posture because I feel like I need to move through it, and I want you to be in witness of my journey through this posture. And then comes into these really great conversations that we have as a community.
I really admire that, because as much as you say, you use the word selfish. So I can recognize that, yeah, maybe it is selfish because you're taking the practice that you're leading and you're shifting it or shaping it to what you need in the moment. However, where I think there's power in this and movement and transition, no puns intended there with yoga, is that you have the opportunity to model vulnerability in a way that allows everyone in the room to see how important it is to share and to not be alone in that. Because I know so many people just hide things. They keep it to themselves. And for example, you could have shared that you needed to work through this because you've just had your second miscarriage of the year. Meanwhile, Susie on the mat is experiencing her second, her third, whatever, maybe her first. And then she's experiencing like, okay, you know what? And again, like I said, I've never experienced a miscarriage. It's only been really close people in my life that have. But from what I understand of people that have miscarried is that even though you know that so many people miscarry numerous times, you feel alone. You feel alone in that. You feel like it's your experience. You're the only one that's experienced this. And granted, it is a huge thing to experience. That is traumatic. That is a huge loss. But I think where there is so much love to give is to show others that they aren't alone. And so I so highly admire your ability and openness and willingness to share that, because I think that it's like the butterfly effect. I think that that's really going to be spreading in really beautiful ways. Have you seen others open up in that way?
Yeah, I have. And, you know, even those close to me in my life, you know, when I went to have the conversation with my own parents, with my mom and my dad, mm-hmm. I had known that my mom had miscarried just before she conceived myself. So I know that she was pregnant with twins, and I knew that she lost both of the babies. But then my mom, through me going and telling my parents, when I first miscarried a year ago, my mom started opening up about her experience. And it was it blew my mind. That's all I could say in that moment is my mind is blown and my heart is broken, because I didn't realize the state of the state of when she miscarried. And I had this perception in my mind that this is what her miscarriage looked like, when it turned out it was completely on the other end of the spectrum. And that, yeah, this was crazy. And it was also, my relationship with my mother has always been a whirlwind of experiences. And I love her, and I know she loves me. But we're mother and daughter, and it's a cat fight, and it's never going to change. And it was in this moment that everything that had come before that moment didn't matter. It was two women. She wasn't even my mother in that moment. This was a fellow woman who was sitting here sharing her journey, sharing her experience so raw and authentically with me. Mm-hmm. And my mom, she don't share nuns.
Yeah.
My mom is a very private, private individual.
Yeah, that would have opened up a lot. And I think that, like you say, even though she wasn't your mother in that moment, to be able to have that moment to reflect on must mean so much.
It does. And you know what? It constantly, I hold it very close to my heart that when I move into a space with my mom since that moment where I might move into a not as compassionate space, mm-hmm. or a judgmental space, mm-hmm. or a space that is just icky and sticky, because there's something happening and we're butting heads or we're not seeing eye to eye. I bring myself back to that moment. Mm-hmm. And I remind myself that the woman in front of me is the woman in front of me and that she is love and mm-hmm. she is powerful and that this is just a moment. And we can always go back to being in that moment when she was being so raw and authentic with me. It was very, very healing, extremely mm-hmm. healing.
Mm-hmm. It's nice, I think, that you have that to look back on, but also to aspire for moving forward in some way where you'll hit another milestone and you'll be able to just reach out and have that space held for you again. I think it's really beautiful.
It's kind of the question you went back to or the answer that you went back to, Amanda, is that in the darkest moments, like what have you learned? What has COVID presented to you and what COVID has presented? Because you can, whether it's loss or it's COVID or anything in between that challenges you, what is this moment gifting you? Mm-hmm. It's gifting you something. Yeah, it challenges you and you're like, this fucking sucks.
Yeah, I know.
Like I'm in this and I can barely breathe and I'm struggling. And it's a gift. Mm-hmm. It is a gift. Life is a classroom. Take it, pick the pen up, scribble, write, draw, get it out, move on.
Mm-hmm. Katie, I'm loving this. And I want to make sure that we have time to do my safe haven style questions. So if you are ready.
Sure.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah, shoot away. I'm ready.
What are you most proud of?
Oh, what am I most proud of? I'm most proud of the moments that I have said no.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am so proud of myself for the moments I've said no. And they're not a lot because I'm in the learning of that at the moment. But one that definitely pops out to me is after, you know, being in the field for 15 years and the money's being dangled in my face and that dream title's being dangled in my face. And it's like, will you take this, Katie? Will you continue to go down this trajectory for money, for the title, for what you think everybody thinks that you should have and who everyone thinks you should be? My dad struggled with this one. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, that's what I'm the most proud of because everything that's happened since then in the last 5 years has been from the creation from the words no out of my mouth.
Oh, I have so much love for that because boundaries and saying no is flipping hard. It's not that hard to do, but we make it hard to do. And we give all the excuses as to why we can't do something as opposed to just being like, nope, you don't need to explain, or I do not need to explain myself, or I do not need to give you an excuse as to why. Just no.
And I got to put a disclaimer in. I haven't mastered it. I don't feel I will ever master it.
I think it's a lifelong journey.
For sure. Because I could tell you right now, today I could have said no 3 times and I didn't. And I felt the impact of it. Mm-hmm. And then I went, oh, I felt the impact. And I now know what I know. And that's the thing. When you know what you know, it sets you up to be better, to yes. do better, to witness better. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to say the yes so that you can have the trip and you fall on your face and you're like, oh, you know, oh,
I get it. Should have said no. Yeah.
Yep. There we go. That's my bumper sticker on the back of my car. Should have said no.
Yeah. Good for, I love that. What would you like to be known for?
I'd like to be known just for being authentic. And sometimes authentic is going to be a hot mess. And sometimes authentic is going to be on point. I want to be known for being authentic. And I know that that seems like such a broad answer. It's like, no, Katie, what do you want to be known for? Honestly, I want to be known for being authentic in the moment.
Mm. Mm-hmm. I love it. And if you had a message for everyone listening, what would it be?
The moments that are your moments, and don't let anyone else have real estate in them. So whatever you're in this moment, it's yours. So laugh, cry, throw things, do what you need to do, be unapologetic, make this moment a non-negotiable for you, as in this is a non-negotiable that I'm in it. And don't let anyone else have any say in your moments without permission, of course.
Yeah. That just made me think of something that I meant to ask you earlier. So I'm going to ask you now. I recognize that you have a very mindful practice and yoga that you implement into your days and into your life. What are other things that help you reset best?
I love water. I'm a water baby. Cute little side story. I was born about 2.5 months preemie. Apparently, I was really eager to come into this world. Some days I ask why, but anyway, it's not like I can go back in. Uh-huh. I'm out.
Yeah.
And in the 2 months, or no, it was about 28 days after my birth, I had to stay in the hospital for those 28 days. I was apparently the example baby of how you would bath your baby. So I would get 4 to 5 baths a day. Because I was like this little 2 to 3 pound cutie pie, and I was the baby that was always there, and I was good spirited. Apparently I wasn't sassy or anything. And so I've always had this obsession with water. My parents told me the story much later in life, and I was like, oh, makes sense. So taking a bath is a big thing. So I always end my day in water, pure water. We have a hot tub, I'm trying to flip it over into a salt tub, but anyway, little hint there for the hubby, mm-hmm. if he should listen to this episode. So definitely submerging myself into water is a huge one. Coffee has become huge. I know there's a big controversial conversation. I've had some people say to me, I don't know about that, Katie. It is for me. End of story. That's a non-negotiable. This is my moment. Coffee mm-hmm. it is. Mm-hmm. And crystals. I love my crystals. I always have crystals on me. They're always around me. You know, I used to call it playing with rocks. You know, oh, I'm going to go play with some rocks. I'm really drawn to this rock. No, it was the rock. The crystal was connecting with me. And so, I carry crystals around. I make little first aid crystal kits for anyone and everyone. And those closest to my life, if they are going through anything, you know, often will approach me and be like, Katie, this is what's going on. What crystal can you give me in this moment? Because I really just need to function.
Mm-hmm. Super neat. Super, super neat. I need to make sure that I get your socials too, so that people know where to find you online.
For sure. So if you are on Instagram, it's lifespark_holistic, or you can type in Katie Bushie, BUSHIE. You can find me either way on Instagram. And if you're a Facebook fan, Life Spark Holistic Coaching and Wellness is where you can catch me there. And then from there, you can find my landing page. I'm not going to give you the URL for that because it's a real long. And that's me on social media. Mm-hmm.
Katie, thank you so, so much.
Thanks, Amanda. And you know what? I want to just take this moment to acknowledge you. I want to acknowledge you because you and I met randomly in just the fluke of life. Mm-hmm. You're going through life doing your thing. I'm going through life doing my thing. We ended up talking for an hour, mm-hmm. hour and a half mm-hmm. in the beautiful space that was gifted to us randomly, mm-hmm. probably about a year and a half ago. So I knew you before the vibration of Safe Haven.
Yep, you did.
And I just want to really take this moment to acknowledge this space that you've created. I've watched you birth it, and it's such an honor to now be able to say, hey, I actually am part of the, I'm part of the club. I'm part of, you know, the conversation, the collective. Mm-hmm. So thank you. I'm so appreciative. I love your podcast. I listen to it regularly, and everyone that has come before me, wow. Mm. Big shoes to fill on my end. Big shoes to fill.
Well, everything you just said makes my heart explode. It means a lot. So thank you. So many smiles.
That was awesome. That was great.
Katie, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate you and I admire you so greatly. And for reference, I did some reflecting, and it's been more like 3 years since we first met at the mall, if you can believe it. It's a meeting that I will never forget. If this episode has hit you right in the heart or inspired you in any way, please screenshot the screen while you're listening, send it to your friends, and share it in your Instagram stories. Please be sure to tag us so that we can personally thank you for it. To everyone listening, I recognize the privilege that comes with my platform, and I'm committed to creating a safe, brave, and inclusive space with intention. For more great podcasts, check out frequencypodcastnetwork.com, and I will talk to you next week.